This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
And on Tuesdays, we're joined by Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol. It's always a treat to have him. We'll be talking to the Cardinals skipper with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Cardinals have won four in a row, and they are in New York to take on the Mets this evening. 6:10 start on KMOX. We welcome in the manager, Ollie Marmol, joining us from the Big Apple. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. First of all, congratulations are in order. We haven't spoken to you since the big news that you are joining Dave Roberts' National League All-Star Team staff. That is, I know, a big for you, and it has to feel great to be along with Don Mattingly in Philadelphia.
It definitely is, man, especially getting the invite from Doc is a big deal. I've gotten to know him over the last couple of years, man, and he's been great to me. So it's been really cool to get to kind of experience that. But, man, heading over to the All-Star game, it means a lot, man, representing our fan base, our players, our staff, our org, and my family's pumped. So I'm looking forward to it.
Lee Bernie, congratulations on that. Really happy for you. But also happy for you in another thing, you know, with the change that have been made, you know, watching the games over the weekend, I'm thinking, man, Ollie Marmol has got so many choices now that maybe you weren't there before. He's got a chance to kind of deepen that lineup 5 through 9 and get creative, play matchups. Your job's never easy, but how much easier is it to have more options available to you?
Yeah, like when you think about game planning against the opposition, you're constantly looking at where their lanes to deploy your lefties. If you bring them in, what can they do on the opposite side as far as do they have a real threat from the right side? Do they have real threats from the left side? And then you just act accordingly. So now having the Velasquez and the guys that are on the bench, man, like it makes you think twice when you're on the other side as far as when you bring in a lefty. And because there's a real threat, man. He's got some power, and you got some options now from the right and left side, and some versatility from a positioning standpoint. So it is an advantage, and I feel like we're better positioned right now than we were earlier in the year, which could be a lot of fun.
And, you know, I didn't really want to get into a Nolan Gorman conversation, but he's part of this next question. When you when you go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 now, you know, it used to be, you know, Gorman's the number five guy most of the time behind the big four. That probably puts a little pressure on him. Now he just kind of can blend in with the other guys. He's got more backup down deeper in that lineup. Do you think that's something that can help him? Because you have been using him a little deeper in the lineup now.
I hope so. Like today, he's going to be hitting eighth. And to your point, I hope it allows him to kind of just relax and not feel like he's the one that has to get everything done behind the guys that have been getting on a ton, right? So right. Newt has the ability to now be behind Walker. And then you have Mason. You kind of go Brooksie down there as well. So hopefully it allows him to kind of take a breath and just get back to trying to implement the stuff that he's been working on without that pressure. But we'll see how it goes, but that's my hope.
You know, over Gorman's career, he's had about 1,800 plate appearances, so it's not like he hasn't gotten a ton of time. The one thing I'm wondering about him is, does it, and this could go for any player, I guess, who the intent is to be a regular, does it matter that he is, for the first time, getting the opportunity of being the starting third baseman, his job, and if he has it for a full season, you know, go ahead and run with it? Because it's the first time he's gotten that. Does that matter, or should it matter to a player?
It does matter to a player, right? Because you can look at the at-bats. He's gotten a ton of opportunity, but it's been in and out of lineups based on the other guys that we had here, right? So he's never had, like, that full long run. But the thing is, man, like, certain players with short runs take advantage of it. Sometimes it takes a minute. With Gorman at the moment, we wanted to check the box this year of giving him the opportunity to be in there every day and know that he's an everyday guy and seeing how he handles it. So that's exactly where we're at in this process.
The resurgence of Nathan Church, what did you hear about what he was able to do in Memphis? I know he popped one out of the ballpark there on Sunday afternoon as he was wrapping up some rehab.
Yeah, so all the reports are he's been feeling really good. We wanted to make sure that there was nothing lingering, that he can go out there and play back-to-back and feel good about where he's at. And that was a tough conversation, man, with Vic. It really was. This is a guy that's, I don't have to tell you guys, he's a hard worker. He's going to do everything you ask him to do. And it just wasn't translating at this level at the moment. There's certain adjustments he has to make. There's a certain way he's being pitched that made it really, really tough on him. But it's not because of a lack of effort, determination, or work. He's going to go down to AAA. He's going to put his head down. And he's going to do everything possible to get back up here. But in the meantime, Church is ready to go, and I'm excited to have him in the lineup.
Ali, you know, Church looks so good in so many ways, but when I was going through his profile, I couldn't help but notice there was a lot of chase. There was a lot of chase, you know, when he was up here. And I'm not saying that to bring up a negative. I'm saying that because I can only imagine how good he will be in terms of if a lot more of his swings are in the strike zone, because when he hits strikes, his numbers are fantastic. Is that something?
Yeah.
You guys are putting, you know, in front of him about how good he could really be if he can just cut down on the chasing.
This dude swings a lot, and we need him to swing less. And he is more than aware of this topic because it's the one thing that'll keep him from truly being able to reach his ceilings. If you look at Burleson when he first got up here, man, the swing rate was through the roof. It didn't matter. Ball strike, he was swinging, and he was putting it in play. So there was a lot of chase, but it led to a lot of weak contact as well. He's gotten to the point where he's trying to control the strike zone better. He's trying to take his walks and not swing as much. This will be a similar process with Church, where he can impact the baseball, and he can help you win in a lot of ways. But if his swing rate remains high, it's going to be very difficult for him to do those things. So we have to get to a point where he's controlling the strike zone. He's not swinging as much, and he's only swinging when he can impact the baseball. That will be the test and one we keep a close eye on. And, I mean, when I say he's aware, this is the one thing we've been working pretty hard at.
So what's the process of doing that? Because you can tell a guy, and he probably knows without you having to tell him that he needs to swing a little bit less. But it's different when you get in the box and then your, you know, reaction and instinct take over because you're a hitter and you have to react to the pitch. Yeah. So what is the process like when you're not playing or when he's not playing or even in game to get him to that point where he's not chasing as much?
The game planning is a big part of it, right? Because you go from having this too broad of a plan to kind of narrowing it down to the one specific part of the zone that you're trying to control and trying to do damage in. And everything else, just we don't want him to get to a point where he's passive, right? Because you can get on the other side of this where he just becomes passive, and that's not it. But, hey, this is where we're hunting. This is the pitch we're hunting, and these counts. And being very specific about that. And it takes time. It's not going to be overnight, but the better he gets at understanding what the opposition is trying to do to him and then having a real game plan as to how he wants to combat it, that's where you start to see some of this change. So it'll come down to him, Brownie, BA, and that group being able to kind of lock that in and seeing how good he can get at only attacking a certain part of the strike zone based on just some count sensitive stuff. So it's a process. But it's one we're committed to, one he's aware of and committed to, and our hope is that we start to see some progress in that area.
Ali Marmol is joining us live from New York as the Cardinals take on the Mets tonight. He's on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Ali, your day off yesterday has to be a breath of fresh air for the bullpen each and every time. Just a great way to recharge them. But also, when Hunter Dobbins goes five like that, I mean, what an outstanding effort by him on so many different levels, and now you get the opportunity to see him as a starter. What has been the emergence of Hunter Dobbins and why?
Yeah, so we wanted to do a couple things there. We wanted to be able to give the bullpen a rest and use him two times over the last couple of weeks. You just know once he comes in, you have to stick with him, and it gives the guys a blow. So we wanted to protect the bullpen that way, knowing that he would take the third start here in New York and then give the rotation a day of rest where we can push everybody back, which has been super helpful. The planning behind that, we talked about this last off day. where I was like, hey, man, it wasn't an off day. We had a lot of planning to do, and we wanted to make sure we were buttoned up when it came to how we wanted to use Dobbins and a couple other guys and some of the changes that we've seen over the last couple of days. Well, this was a big part of it. And I'm excited now to see him take his start because he's done a nice job in relief. But we know this guy's a starter that can help us down the road. He did a nice job of protecting the bullpen and now the rotation. And we get to see him here in New York.
Ali, I'm gonna be stupid and I'm gonna lighten up the conversation a little bit. Can I do that?
Let's do it.
Okay, day off and night off in New York. Did you and the coaches go wild? Did you go to Luger's and eat like a huge porterhouse? Did you get tickets to the Knicks game?
Yeah,
did
game
you
go three, clubbing? Man.
What did you do,
man? This is gonna be great because it was very different from that. I went to the ice cream museum with my two little ones.
Oh boy.
They're here. My wife's here. So we had a busy day of doing a lot of more kid type friendly stuff. So it was a good time. They don't miss the New York trip, man. My little ones absolutely love coming here. They love the toy store, the whole deal. So my off day was a little different than what you just described.
Do you know if anybody from the team got to the game?
Man, I don't think so. I checked in to see kind of what that would look like, and it was as you guys are aware, it was a pretty penny to attend.
Uh-huh.
But the city, man, there's a really good energy here as far as just all the bars and restaurants last night were packed out, kind of watch parties. It was a pretty cool environment to just walk around the town.
You guys have some connections. There's always that chance you could get in there for game four. There's no doubt. The other thing about New York that I always love is it gives your players, and you for that matter, an opportunity to get some national limelight. You had McGreevy, and I believe JJ was doing some stuff nationally yesterday.
Network, yeah.
And you know, the media contingent at Citi Field today, it's a chance for you to talk to a wide audience about what you're doing, which I'm sure is good for those young guys.
It is. And I didn't do the whole thing just yet. I will at some point today, but it seemed like those guys did a really nice job. And the report that came back was that they handled it really, really well. And those are two really good personalities for it as well, man. They could let loose a little bit, and they're young, and they enjoy it. So I'm glad they got to go on the network there and kind of show a little bit of their personalities. But anytime you're in New York, the media is definitely heavier, and it'll be good for these guys. I love when we get to play in these type of environments. So tonight and the rest of the series, I think, would be a heck of a lot of fun for me.
I got to ask you a Lars Nootbaar question. Listen, your club, before Newt came back, had all kinds of energy, great attitude, great hustle, everything, great personality collectively. So Newt didn't have to add any of that because it was already there. But I know he enhances the mix. Tell us how he enhances the mix.
That's the great part about this, right? It's always good when one of your best players comes back and you're already playing well. But when you look at the overall personality of the club, you have a group that brings a ton of energy. They've been playing hard. They've been playing the game the right way. They're giving you everything they've got, and they're having a blast doing it. And then you add Newt, who you could just double down on that, man, because of his personality and what he brings to the table. He's a guy that enjoys playing the game, brings a ton of energy. The fans love getting behind him. So having him in that homestand at the end there was awesome because it just added to what was already happening in our clubhouse. So this is what I loved about it is that group stayed connected with him even when he was rehabbing in Jupiter and in Memphis and in Springfield. And it's seamless. He comes in and he just adds to the overall fun that we're having. But it's I'll tell you what, man, being able to put his name in that lineup is a heck of a lot of fun.
You know, I have a question that was given to me by somebody else, and this is a baseball question, but it's not specific to any players. And I thought about this also because it happened on Friday, and I cannot remember who it was. But why does it happen when a ball goes into the right field corner or gets is thrown away, and it happens down that first baseline? Why do players, when they're running from first to second and potentially could make it to third, how come they're always looking over their shoulder instead of looking at the third base coach? Why does that happen, and doesn't it irritate you?
No, it doesn't.
Oh.
Because the third base coach actually has the toughest view. So what tends to happen is Pop has to mimic whatever Stubby's doing because he can't see the distance as well as you would think the player is from the ball. So, like, specifically, that play you're talking about, Pop came in and he's like, man, I cannot see at all how close he is to that ball. Like, I'm just, whatever Stubby's doing, I'm going to mimic it because he has the best angle as far as how far he is. So that's where it's tough, where you, as a player, as a runner, you peek back and you can gauge distance and then you get going. Now, I think sometimes the player stares too long and they kind of get indecisive, but like your best bet is just peek over your shoulder, see where the player is, see where the ball is and keep going. Cause that third base coach has less of a clue based on distance than the player does.
Got it.
Speaking of right field, Ollie, we'll just wrap up with this. The campaign is at full throttle right now. Jordan Walker for the All-Star team in the National League. He is certainly deserving of that honor, wouldn't you say?
Are you kidding me? Absolutely, man. This guy's absolutely killing it. And the league is enjoying watching it, and the fans are enjoying watching it. This is a guy it's so easy to root for, especially if you know the ins and outs of how hard it was for him to get to this spot. I mean, you get beat up in this game when things don't go your way and you're supposed to be a dude and that wears on you. So knowing what he's been through, the conversations that he's had and, man, it's well deserving for him to be considered for that, man. I'm loving watching him, every day, the way he's preparing, the way he's playing and the way our fan base is supporting him. It's been really cool. So, yeah, you've got my vote.
Well, you've got one of the biggest fan bases in the sport, and I know they're going to do their part to try to get Jordan in that game. We appreciate you very much, Ollie. Thank you for taking the time in this busy game day, and good luck tonight against the Mets.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol. Ollie joining us from New York as the Cardinals take on the Mets tonight at 6:10, pregame at 5:15. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. We will all be back in just a moment.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Back on the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji and Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. Good to hear from Ollie Marmol making some arrangements for us. You could tell he was on the phone today, not on video, as he's hustling there in New York City to get to the ballpark. Got his family in tow. I mean, it's a big day for him. And I think this Mets team, Bernie, is you got to be a little careful here. I mean, they've won 7 of 10. I know they're the last place team, and they've been a mess all year and kind of the laughingstock of New York and all that stuff. But be careful. They're starting to play a little bit better.
I think they're especially dangerous right now. Here's why. I was reading a story about this. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I apologize. The Mets have played a very unusual schedule so far. They have had, like, their first four road trips of the season, at some point during the road trip, they were on the West Coast. They have played an unusually high number of games on the West Coast. They've played only 6 games in the Central Time Zone, and they haven't played that many in the Eastern Time Zone. So they're kind of tired and fed up of not only being on the road, but being all the way across the country so many times. They view this return to Citi Field as like a kind of a reset moment. They got the West Coast travel behind them for the entire rest of the season. And they're playing a little better. They feel better. They got Freddy Peralta lined up tonight. They have a good young pitcher, Christian Scott, going tomorrow night. And then one of the top rookie pitchers in the majors, Nolan McLean, is set to go. It's not official, but it's his turn to go on Thursday. So the Cardinals are going to run into some tough pitching in the series.
Yeah, Ranj, and they've won 7 of 10. They've outscored the opposition 55-29 in that span. They have multiple home runs in 8 of those 10 games, so they are killing the ball. And this Carson Bench is just out of control. He went 5-for-5 on Sunday with a home run. He's now hit in 6 consecutive at-bats. And since they moved him into the leadoff spot, he's been on an absolute tear where he's hit .327 with 4 home runs, 15 RBIs, 19 runs scored since moving into the leadoff spot about a month ago.
They have closed up that run deficit pretty considerably. They're not only, I think they're a -5 and the Cardinals are a -2 in run differential. And they're only five games out of a wild card spot right now with a bunch of games to play. And, of course, there are a lot of teams in between them and that third wild card, the Padres. But if it really was a lot about that hectic, crazy, ridiculous schedule they had early on, I mean, maybe you could give them a couple of games in there, which would put them, what, maybe three or four out of a wild card right now. So, yeah, I don't think they're cooked for the entire season, but they have a lot of coming back to do, and they're still six game or seven games under 500. So this is a long way for them to go, but I would always consider them to be really dangerous, even though they haven't played well yet, because it does seem like the kind of team to me that could break out at any point. You got to be careful.
Cardinals just went through all the teams in the NL Central, including complete domination. I know they trailed in the three games, but boy, the Reds were bad, Bernie. I mean, bad. I don't know.
Get
what
to that bullpen, man.
And Terry Francona held a players-only meeting. A lot of good that did because they lost again to the Padres yesterday, but they're not good. I mean, they were walking people. They were fumbling around with the ball. I mean, something's really wrong there.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're 11-23 now in their last 34 games, and the bullpen is just horrendous. There's no other way to put it. And, you know, the Cardinals won, they swept that series for a lot of reasons, but the one that stands out to me, you know, in the three games, the Cardinals bullpen pitched 12 and a third inning, gave up one run, where the Reds in that series, they had a bullpen ERA of close to nine. I mean, the Cardinals got into that bullpen and did so much damage, and that's why they were able to come back each time. So even if the Reds get a good start and they have some good starting pitchers, they just can't seal the deal.
They took on a team that did have some issues, and the Cardinals got it done, no doubt about it. Bernie, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk about something that I know everybody wants to know, and that is if the Cardinals remain at this level and they're in the playoff race in a month, what will the conversation be? What is the trade deadline looking like? Who goes? Who stays? We're going to go through all of it, and we're going to take your comments, even the crazy ones. Well, maybe not, but some of them.
We should.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
All right, the questions and comments are coming in on YouTube, Facebook, X, and I'm sure various other places, including our text line. However you want to get in, 314-436-7900 is the text line. And of KMOX Sports, and it looks like KMOX News also carrying this fine program called the Gas House Gang, as well as 104.1 FM, 11:20 a.m., and all of your smart speakers. We're everywhere. With Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. All right, let's get to these in no particular order. David says, great show. If May, Romero, and O'Brien are moved at the deadline, Bernie, who do you think steps in to replace them? Let me ask you that in two parts. Do you think that all three will be moved, Bernie? And who steps in to replace them if they are?
Well, I mean, I think they would be on the table. I think May, being kind of when he signed, there was almost an understanding that he was going to be a one-and-done guy here. And one of the reasons Heimblum was motivated to sign him is because he thought he would be someone who was viable as a trade piece at the deadline. That was part of the motivation. So I would expect May to go, and especially if Dobbins is ready to be a full-time member of that rotation. They really value Jojo Romero, and I thought they were going to trade him last year, and they didn't. And I don't know if that'd be the case this year, but they don't have another lefty behind him that gives you any confidence. That's kind of scary. He's also a lefty that can do a pretty solid job of getting right-handed batters out. Now, maybe they would move someone to the bullpen like a Libitor. I doubt that in 2026. So I would say May if the offer's good. I would say Romero if it's a really good offer. Oh, see, I think O'Brien's a total wild card. I mean, a couple months ago, I would have said he'd be their most valuable trade piece, but he's gone off the rails. I mean, he just has. And he's got to get that sinker ball back. And because that hit, that pitch has just been getting clobbered since late April. I mean, clobbered. So I don't think his trade value is today what it would have been, say, in mid-April. I think the one guys, and I'll shut up after I just throw this on the table. I think the one guy that would maybe caused the most angst within Heimblum in terms of trade or no trade would be Lars Nootbaar if he's healthy and going well.
So I kind of feel like if they, and right now they're the top wild card, there are a couple of games in front of the Diamondbacks. Phillies are in second, Diamondbacks are in third. If they start to fall back, which is what the reporting was from Bob Nightingale the other day, that if they are, then May and Romero are likely going to be gone. Whatever value you can get, and I think Zachary, or was it Zachary who wrote this on YouTube? Yes, it was. Zachary on YouTube says relievers are so volatile, you got to get value for JoJo if you can. And I completely agree with that. With Romero and even with O'Brien, if he can find a way over the next 3-4 weeks, and this is kind of a having to thread a needle here, that the Cardinals have to drop off, but he has to pick it up. And if those two things happen together, then, yeah, you got to get whatever you can in return for them, because there are going to be several teams out there, as there always are at the deadline, who need relief help. And if he can turn into a good closer again, that reliable guy that they had at the beginning of the year, some team's going to snatch him up, and they would have to take whatever they could get, and which I think would be a good enough return to make it worth their while.
Yeah, I think between the draft and the trade deadline, this prospect pool for the Cardinals is going to be off the charts. My question to Bernie is, do you go find something that can help you if you are in position to make the playoffs? What is that? And without going too far, obviously.
Well, it all depends at that specific time what they need. If, you know, gosh forbid there be an injury that causes you big problems, you got a big void, you know, you might have to change what you're looking for. But I am confident that Chaim Bloom will get help, but I think he'll get help in a way that will leave some observers disappointed, because it may not be a, quote, name player. It won't be a guy that's making a lot of money. It could be a stealth move, the way George Soriano was a stealth move. And I think this is where Bloom's Tampa Bay background is immensely valuable, because they have a way of discovering hidden gems, guys that are better than what is generally assumed, and they know they can fix them, they can make them better, they can do things with them. I think it would be a move or two along those lines. Now, if you ask me to name who that player would be, I have no idea. That's the whole point. They're kind of hidden gems, right? Yeah. I never heard of the name George Soriano before Chaim Bloom went out and got him in spring training.
Yeah, I agreed.
That's the nature of relief pitching, though.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can find people, right?
That's always been Heim's thing, Bernie. Going back to his Tampa Bay days, he always found those diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, and they've, you look at the Tampa Bay organization, they do it all the time. I mean, and, you know, that's where he learned about, you know, how to do these type of things. And that stuff is embedded in him. And whether it be an outfielder you're looking for or someone who can play third base in a platoon situation, maybe. I don't know who that is. But I will say this. I got to be grumpy here for a second. I get so tired of – I was like, today I'm reading something like, well – and this was on a national blog. You know, Bloom needs to go after Aroldis Chapman. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Well, who wrote that?
You know, I mean, I mean this nonsense constantly, it's just – and then what it does is it gets Cardinals fans thinking they're going to go after Aroldis Chapman anyway. I can't stand this stuff. The other thing is like, okay, they may need a third baseman. Okay, maybe that's something they want to do. Okay, but who's out there? I've seen people nominate Alec Bohm of the Phillies. His numbers are as bad as Gorman's, plus he's embroiled in all kinds of personal stuff.
Oh, yeah,
because he's
parents.
Suing his parents.
Yeah.
You know, so why would you want to do that? And, you know, people say, well, Houston will probably trade Isaac Paredes. But the thing about Paredes is that all the big shooters that have a lot of money who think that he's the missing piece, they're going to try to trade for him. We think Chaim Bloom's going to outbid the Yankees or a team like that to try to get him? No, it's not going to happen.
The other one is third base. What are you going to do there? There are a lot of comments, obviously, about that. Third base. We've talked about Nolan Gorman. Behind him, there's not a lot right now. Ramon Arias is injured. I'm talking about in the future. There's nothing really in the pipeline right now at third base. Is that a concern? And do you just go draft a third baseman? Does that solve the problem, or do you need to go trade for one now?
You could get a stopgap now, but, you know, the more I think about it, even though I have some misgivings, I have immense respect for Jose Fermin. And if Jose Fermin has played about 170, 177 innings at third base in the majors, now he's not very good, at least not up until now, defensively. But if we're talking about a platoon and we're talking about him starting against left-handed pitchers, I got enough respect for Fermin and the job he's done at playing different role players all over the field. I would say give that a try. Just give it a try. You know, you're not committed to it long term. Just give it a try.
In the top 30 prospects in MLB Pipeline or MLB.com, only two are marginally third base. One of them is Blaze Jordan, who we've already discussed, first base, third base. The other one is Daniel Ortiz, who is also a third base slash first baseman, 21-year-old, has some power. There's no question about that, but he's pretty young. He's real young in terms of experience right now. Right.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Final segment on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. It is great to be with you all, with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and James O'Sullivan. This is the E-line saying the Cardinals aren't one superstar away. They're not built for a deep October run yet. Bloom should not sacrifice the rebuild for a short-term push. No question about it. I mean, there is no way that they are going to make a splash for any of these big names. You can forget about it. They're going to go with holding on to their prospects and acquiring more. And if anything, they're going to make maybe just a little push so that they don't go off the rails, as Bernie said, in terms of an injury or something that goes awry, especially with the starting rotation. Like, you can't go through a season, you're going to burn everybody out if you don't have a starting rotation. You have to have some semblance of a rotation.
Yeah, and I know that, okay, let's say they get closer to the trade deadline here, and they are still in the position they're in, first, second, third wild card. They're not going to overtake the division. Milwaukee has decided that you're going to have to stop them, and nobody is stopping them right now. So let's say that does happen. They're in a wild card position. I don't think you do a whole lot here. And I do, as we talked about before, understand the idea of maybe you want to throw a bone to the players and to the fan base, which has come out this year. They've watched a little bit more than last year, and they've been excited about the team, and they feel like it's a good, fresh start and something different, and they're really embracing it. You've got a lot of good young players. I understand the idea of wanting to throw a bone to them by saying, this has been a good year, and guys, we believe in you enough that we're going to give you a little bit more. Like, this is what we think of you. But because it's a young team, I think I lean toward staying the course regardless and making it clear to the guys in the clubhouse that, hey, yeah, you'd probably like us to go out there and make a big splash, but, you know, we are trying to accomplish something greater and more sustainable here, so it's not going to go that route, right? Like, that's the way I see this going in, because to me, no matter what they do, they need to stay really, really true to the course that they have set for themselves before the season started.
That's right. Bernie, we got a question from Greg Birdie with Ophthalmology Associates, one of our great sponsors. Just sent me a text, said, good afternoon, I'm listening to you.
Dr. Malhotra doing him. And worried sick about him.
He said, you're mentioning looking for third base in the Cardinal system. My question is, did J.J. Weatherholt play third base while he was at West Virginia? If so, could that be a possible switch? And when would we would just be looking for a second baseman? The answer to your question is, yes, he did play third base. Most recently, actually played it at Memphis for a little bit last season, believe it or not. About a dozen games or so. One year he played a full season at third base at West Virginia, pretty much sharing it with second base. Bernie, I would guess, though, the answer to that second part is no. I mean, they've established that he's top of the line second baseman, and that's where they want him. But boy, you know, the fantasy of having him move around is appealing, but I think that is where he's going to be.
You know, and then, well, I agree. I mean, could they do it? Yeah. Do I think they will do it? No. You can make the case that he's the best second baseman in baseball defensively. All the metrics basically scream that out to you. And teaming him with Mason Wynn is such a defensive gauntlet for a ground ball pitching staff because of all the double plays they turn, all the balls they get to, their range going left, going right. That is such a strength for the kind of pitching staff they have. I don't think you mess with that. And then the other thing is, you move Weatherholt to third, like, who do you play at second where you say, oh, yeah, plug him in? Like who's that guy?
Yeah, you'd have to go find one at this point. Yeah. There's nobody even within the universe of J.J. Weatherholt.
I mean, Fermin could play, he could play second base, yeah. I think. But again, I don't know. I wouldn't mess with that.
No, moving him to third seems desperate. And they're just not in a desperate position. I don't know why you do it. And to your point, Bernie, the ground ball rate from this pitching staff is second best behind the Yankees. They do a fantastic job of keeping the ball on the ground.
It's a good question for a conversation. It's a total sports bar question, sitting around, moving guys around.
After you've had a few Busch Lights and Budweisers.
It's a better question than moving Jordan Walker to third base.
Oh, my God. Let me
say that.
We've already had that today. We've had it at least twice on the...
Did someone say that already?
Somebody said it earlier,
We're not going there.
It's like, it's like playing Strat-O-Matic baseball, man. People just sort of take those cards and move people all over the place.
Yeah.
Except we're talking about real humans. And, you go mess with Jordan Walker when he is
he's
one
doing
of the
well.
Most elite hitters in Major League Baseball. And so then you're gonna scramble his brains by putting him at third base.
Leave him alone.
Come on. We're better than that.
Hey man, you're doing great. Now we're gonna throw something else on your plate. Right. You mind learning a new position mid-season or going back to an old one? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just a couple of minutes left, Bernie. I know that you talk about a lot of topics on YouTube and in your columns, which I believe you call Breakfast with Bernie.
I got a morning column and an afternoon column. Yeah, Breakfast with Bernie, then the Redbird Review.
What's the hottest thing going right now from you? And I think I want to lean towards concerns. We know what you're hot on right now, what you like about this team, I think. What are you most concerned about at the moment?
I feel better about the lineup because they I'm telling you what, this 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 thing is already getting a lot better. So that I was very concerned about that, but they promoted from within and they're stronger there. And that's really good. I really think that it's a matter, and you mentioned it earlier, Tom, these starting pitchers have done a really good job based on the talent they have. They really have. They've exceeded their talent level. I do worry, though, about a couple of guys going down. And the Cardinals have done a wonderful job, Ollie Marmol and Dusty Blake, of doing what they can to prevent injuries. But I do worry about a couple of pieces of that rotation getting knocked out. And then they don't have a lot of depth at AAA. And I know people are talking up Quinn Matthews. I get it. But is he – it depends on the timing, but is Quinn Matthews going to be ready for a major league rotation job that where you can count on him? They'll have Hunter Dobbins. So I do worry about that because if the run prevention starts to slip and really starts to crack, I think they're in some trouble. So that, I would say that's my number one area. I do.
Yeah. The Cardinals will be playing tonight in New York against the Mets. We've already warned you about the Mets and how they've had a resurgence, especially with their offense. So be careful here. Dustin May is the starting pitcher for the Cardinals tonight, and the Cardinals will play three. Hunter Dobbins is going to start the Thursday game, which is exciting to see the addition to the rotation, showing a little bit of that depth there. On tomorrow's show, we will be joined by U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt. He will discuss not only the congressional baseball game that he's about to play in, but the legislation that he is pushing to clean up college sports. He has a lot on his mind with regard to that, so we'll talk to him about that. We'll also have a lot of baseball talk. We'll have our Budweiser toast. I wonder who that's going to be tomorrow. Thank you very much for being with us. Bernie, have a great rest of your day, buddy.
Thank you. Great being with you guys.
Thanks to Ronj. Hydrate today, folks. It's going to be a hot couple days here in St. Louis. Enjoy yourselves. Thanks for joining us. Cardinal baseball tonight at 6:10 with a 5:15 pregame with Matt Pauly right here on the home of the Cardinals, KMOX.